there was some chatter at Jordan Brand Classic that Melo was going around telling our teammates, yo, JJ's not getting MVP of this game. Don't pass it to him.
This is me. Let me clear this up. Yo, welcome back, man. 7 p.m. in Brooklyn. I'm Carmelo Anthony here with my co-host.
It's your boy, the Kid Mero, man. Y'all said stop doing aliases, so I'm going to chill for one episode, but I'm coming back next week.
This is 7 p.m. in Brooklyn, a Wave Sports and Entertainment original, and it's presented by Prize Picks. Don't forget it.
With that being said, this morning, we have a special guest, a really good friend of mine. A
lot of history between y'all two.
Virginia's very own. From the old man in the Threes podcast, LeBron's new co-host on Mind the Game, and my fellow class of 2002, Jordan Brand Classic and McDonald's All-American, JJ Redick.
Both
welcome to 7 p.m. in Brooklyn.
Let's go.
What's good, bro? Talk to us. What's going on in the JJ's verse?
A lot of accolades, bro. There's a lot of accolades we just run off for.
There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on.
It is.
It's a pleasure to be here with you guys, man. I'm glad this worked out. You brought up the history, and I've teased him about this before, but we were the same high school class. We played in the McDonald's All-American game. The following week was the Jordan Brand Classic, and Melo had a great game in the McDonald's game.
Oh, shit.
And I feel like I probably had a little bit better of a game, and I ended up getting MVP. And there was some chatter at Jordan Brand Classic that Melo was going around telling our teammates, yo, JJ's not getting MVP of this game. Don't pass it to him.
This is me. Let me clear this up. But
before you clear it up. Where was the game, champ?
So,
where was the game?
It was
at?
In DC. It was in DC. Okay.
Come on
it
now.
It was 2002. Jordan Brand Classic. It used to be the Capital Classic before. And the Jordan Brand took it over. And he won MVP at McDonald's. I've never told anybody I'm not passing him the fucking ball. I thought we was going to be Cole. MVP.
Oh, okay.
Of the McDonald's game.
Okay. Have that ever happened before?
I feel like it's happened.
I think so.
If I'm not mistaken, it happened.
That's
I want to say
question.
Like one of the two or three years after 02. I feel like it was like Dwight and J.R. Smith or something. There was like one year where there were two guys. I only tease him about it. I took 7 shots. He took 24.
I was home.
That's exactly why I said that. I was like, listen, home. When you home... It's different.
On. I said, damn, I can't not get one this summer.
Come on. You got to show up, man. It's the home crowd.
You got McDonald's. Fuck it. I got to get one. Damn.
Listen, between the two of y'all, it's a lot of trophies, a lot of medals. You still got those trophies? And where they at? They're in a storage unit. They're in the garage. They're on the mantle.
Real quick. So I moved into a house. I bought a house my rookie year right after I got drafted. And right when you walked in, there was like a French door and an office space with like built-in shelving. So I was like, this is great. So I put up all the trophies. I put up plaques and pictures, all the meaningful stuff from my career. And then I had a terrible rookie season and I took all that shit off the wall, put it in storage. Other than when I've moved it from one house to another, I haven't looked at it. I know they're in a storage unit. I think they're in a storage unit on Long Island somewhere.
You took it down on some like mental
Long Island somewhere.
Somewhere on Long Island.
Bridgehampton.
All right. Flex on one time.
We are taping before the play-in, you know what I mean? So do remember. Follow, like, and subscribe, obviously. You know what I mean? The number one show on the internet in its entirety. Because we got a very legendary episode coming with the one and only Stephon Starberry Marbury. You know what I mean?
That's a goodie.
You know, that's a woo, boy, that's a banger, goodie. Man. That's a heater. It's ready to come out. We have a segment here, what we call 7 p.m. moments, where it's a moment in your career, in your life. It doesn't have necessarily have basketball related, but a moment in your life where you said, all right, JJ, like, JJ's here, JJ's about to go here.
for me to get here, I got to really lock in, man. And this is a moment in life that catalyzed that path.
How many ups and downs did you have in your career? Countless?
I probably have more ups and downs than successes.
Yeah. I feel like we all think of success in this linear way where it's like, we're here and we want to get here. Oh, I made this decision. Now I'm going to go here. And it just doesn't look like that. Like, I hope to get here, but I just feel like there's all these peaks and valleys within a season, within a career. I had multiple moments like that you're talking about. I think one for me would be after my sophomore year at Duke, really struggled that year, kind of hit like rock bottom. I was like basically hiding from people, like hiding from the coaching staff, hiding from my parents. I had like an incomplete that semester. I was really just like at this dude's apartment for like 2 weeks. The coaches found me, Wojo and Collins, who you know from USA Basketball. They found me, took me to coach's office. They got it like a plan for me and I fell in love with the routine. But then like, you know, I had two more good years in college, and then I didn't play my first 2 years. So after that second year, it was like, I got to change my body. I got to get in better shape. I got to be the best conditioned athlete. So I went back to Duke, trained that whole summer. I played my third year. It wasn't a great year. I was still in and out of the rotation at times, you know, and then fourth year, I finally like played every game. So like those moments, it wasn't like I did it and then I had immediate success or immediate rewards a month later. It took years and years and years to get to the point where someone like me could average 18 in the season, right?
Yeah.
And start and be a full-time starter. Like it wasn't one decision or one moment. It was just a series of them to hopefully get to the point where you're like, all right, I feel good about my career. I feel good.
When was...
Did you feel it? Because I felt like other than winning a championship, I didn't leave anything on the table.
Yeah.
Meaning like I maximized what I had.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you did that?
I feel like I did that for what I have.
Yeah.
Like I did the best that I can do with what was in front of me, with the cards that was dealt to me. I feel like I did the best with those cards that I can do. I mean, there's always room when you sit back and like, damn, I could have did that a little better or I could have did more.
Yeah.
But overall, I would say like I feel like I played my hand the best way that I can play my hand.
That makes sense.
So like and going back to you, because you had a very specific role in the NBA throughout your whole career, right? A lot of people, players, don't accept their roles like that. Like you were considered a role player, right?
Yeah.
And you was a role player and one of the best to do it. People don't want to accept that today. It's not cool to just be a J.J. Redick and just running off screens. Also, the game is different today as well. What was the moment that you had to decide, like, damn, you know what, this, I'm going to take this. This is what they need me to do, and I'm going to be the best at this.
You know, to start my NBA career, it was just a matter of survival, where you legitimately think there's a chance you could be out of the league.
Yeah.
And I was not, I don't know, I don't remember all the specific conversations we even had at like the McDonald's All-American game. I remember Evan Burns, great player, you know, had a bad knee injury in college, you know, didn't have an NBA career, but Evan was a really talented guy. And I remember, you know, all of us, we would have conversations around the NBA. I just remember from that week, like, you know, whether it was Stat or you, CB, Chris Bosh, like, I remember just thinking to myself, like, how are these guys so sure they're going to play in the NBA? Like, you guys, it's such conviction that you're going to be an NBA player. I did not think that, right? It was not a thing. So when I first got to the league, I was very grateful. And then it became like, oh, how do I survive? But ultimately, I view basketball this way. I think everybody's a role player, Mello.
Yeah, indeed.
You had a role.
Absolutely.
Jason Tatum has a role. It's not the same role as Peyton Pritchard.
Yeah.
I think great players and great teams, they buy into whatever role they're given. And I know, like, even later on in your career, there were times where you're like, oh, I'm gonna have to take on a different role with this group or with this team.
You gotta
team.
Buy into that role.
And then you have to buy into it. My first year in Philly, I averaged a career high. They came to me in preseason, and they were like, we want to start Markel Fultz. We want to bring you off the bench. We had just had the best five-man lineup in the NBA this previous season.
Absolutely.
And I was a part of that lineup. And I was like, okay. Because I knew I'm still going to play 30 minutes a game. You know, he had Manu record some stuff about his role and transition to being a six-man. And I was like, Brett, you don't need to even play that for me. Like, I'm all in. Like, if that's what you need for the team, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm good.
Right? I'm good. Like, I'm still going to finish games. You're still going to need my shooting. It's not that. So I always knew whatever the definition of like a role player, like I always knew it. I never thought I was going to be you or LeBron or Steph. Like I never thought that. So it was easier, I think, for me because I didn't have this preconceived notion of like, I'm going to the league and I'm going to be an all NBA player. I was like, I would love if I could play in the NBA and have a good long career.
Yeah. But at a certain point, it became reality. When did it become reality for you when you were like, yo, I'm going to the league? Was it like, I'm going to suit up and go to the draft? What is it? You know what I mean?
He was going to the league, man.
You know what I'm saying? I love the humble shit, but like, be real. Like, you were, like,
it was in the span of a year. Sophomore year, we lose to UConn. I had to, you know, again, I had struggled that whole year. And I get on the plan, which was basically like hour by hour schedule, started seeing a therapist. And a year later, I'm ACC Player of the Year, ACC Tournament MVP, Rupp National Player of the Year. I go out to the Wooden Award because that was the week after the Final Four. All the other awards were at the Final Four. So I go out to LA for the Wooden Award. And, you know, it's like me, Bogut ended up winning. I was second. It was me, Bogut, I think Sean May, a couple other guys. And Sean and I were friends from McDonald's All-American game.
Yep.
And even though he went to UNC. So we were hanging out that whole week and he had an agent meeting. And he was like, yo, come to lunch. I'm meeting with such and such agent. I was like, okay. And I went to the lunch and they're talking. My dad was out there and I was like, Dad, should I be talking to an agent? Should I be thinking about going to the NBA? Like that was in a year. I'm the National Player of the Year in college. And I'm still like, should I be?
Should I?
So like at that moment, now you start seeing yourself on mock drafts and shit and you're like, oh, okay, I think I'm going to be an NBA player. I still decided to go back to Duke, but like I knew after my junior year, I was going to have a chance. But at the beginning of my junior year, coming off my sophomore year, I took Italian so that if I had to go play overseas, I knew a language. I'm dead serious, bro.
So you see all this press, all this stuff, and you still in your head, you're like, yo, I don't know if this could go left.
I don't like making assumptions.
Shit was not going left.
When they talk about Duke, you know, it's like Christian Laettner. You know what I'm saying? JJ Redick, like you're in that pantheon. You know what I'm saying? So like, come on, dog.
I mean, it's just, I think what is, and I try to explain this to people. Like even with my kids that I coach, their fourth grade travel team. I started coaching them last year on a third grade travel team. And like, they all think they're going to the NBA, which is great. Because when I was 8 years old, I was like, I'm going to go play at Duke. It's a far-fetched dream. I'm sure at some point, whether it was 8, 11, 13, right?
You had that moment. I never thought about Duke, though.
No. I'm saying, but you had that moment.
Duke, but they didn't want
to.
You had that moment where you said,
I want to play in the NBA.
Absolutely.
You had that dream, right?
Absolutely.
What I try to explain to people is that that's great. There are millions, potentially billions of people that have that same dream. And there's 450 jobs, and there's about 60 jobs every year that get turned over. So you should never assume you're going to be in the NBA. Sure. I think one of the issues we are having in America right now is that in youth basketball, we are anointing kids too soon. Not everybody is LeBron James. Not everybody can handle that level of pressure and attention and not let it affect them. Developmentally, if you're telling a 14 or 15 year old kid you're going to be an NBA star someday, they think they're already an NBA star. And that's a problem.
You got to keep them humble.
Not just humble. You have to have a level of perspective of what it takes. The NBA is as cutthroat as any fucking business in the world.
Listen, we sit on
business in the world.
I sit and I say the same thing every episode on here. The NBA is hard as shit. Like it's hard to get into the NBA, and it's even harder to stay there year in and year out. Like it's very, very fucking hard. So I'm glad somebody else is actually.
If you go to school and you get your law degree, or you go to school and you get your medical license for whatever, MD, DO, whatever. I don't. There's obviously continuing education and requirements that you have to make that you have the job. In the NBA, you pass a test when you sign up your first contract. You are then tested every single day. And I'll be honest with you, even with the guaranteed contracts, like if you're an asshole, if you're not performing well, they will get rid of your ass. And it's funny because like I think in the NBA too, it's like there's this scale of whatever baggage we all have, because we all have some level of baggage, and our talent. And as long as your talent outweighs the baggage, you're good. You'll probably have a job. But the second that scale gets shifted and there's imbalance in that, you're out of the league.
Yeah.
Peace out.
Even, and I mean, how many, there's hundreds of players right now that could be on an NBA roster.
Absolutely.
And they're playing overseas, or they're playing in the G League, or they're sitting at home training. It's, the NBA never means 1 + 1 = 2.
Never.
It's so hard to get into it, and then it's so hard to stick.
Speaking of staying in the NBA, there's a lot of the players. Was right.
That was a long.
Come on, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of people that will not be staying in the NBA for the rest of the season because the playoffs is right around the corner. I want to hear from y'all. You know what I'm saying? Because you know I'm the fan on the couch screaming. You know what I mean? With alcohol, y'all have been in the playoffs and now are on the other side. You know what I mean? On the media side, what is one series? Each of y'all, I'll start with you, JJ, that you are locked in, focused on. I know what mine is.
Interesting.
Man. Like, this is going to be a good one. This is going to be exciting.
So we're recording this day before the Western Conference play-in and 2 days before the Eastern Conference. Mm-hmm. So we don't know 7-8 seeds. I think of this, the seeds that are set, I think it's very likely that all of the Cleveland Cavaliers and Orlando Magic games are on NBA TV.
I'm not dissing it.
I'm picking up what you're saying now.
That is fucked up.
There's a lot to like with both those teams.
Yes.
I think the general public would not say that's the most intriguing
series. From a business standpoint, we're laughing. And it's on NBA TV.
Right.
Where people go to watch them. You know what I mean? It should be bigger than what. But that's another conversation. But I know my man though.
Hey, I know what you're saying. Listen, I get it. It's like you want the big draws, the big markets to get the. I got to tell you, man, you've been doing this. Like,
look, the Clippers Mavs series, those two teams met back to back years, 20 and 21. There's a history there. Mavs have played as well as any team in the NBA down the stretch of the season. Clippers at one point in time looked like, if not Denver, they're the second best team in the West or the best team in the West, and then hit a rough stretch post-February. But like that to me is probably, at least of what we know, the most intriguing and exciting series. The star power alone in that series with PG and James and Kawhi and Russ, and then Luka on the other side, Luka and Kyrie, like, that's legitimate. That's legitimate.
That's a fun series.
Yeah. And the tactical part of it is interesting to me, too, because T-Lou and J-Kidd in a playoff series.
Two of the best. They're two of the best minds when it comes to strategy and playing that chess game.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always said coaching comes into play in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like it was your talent and your stars, but coaching has a big role in the playoffs. And that's something I always admire about J. Kidd, because he knows it's a different level of being tactical when it comes to the playoffs. Like, I'm not trying to beat you as a as your team. I'm trying to beat your leader.
Right.
Right? I have to go out there and do what I got to do and strategize and figure this out. So I'm playing against, I'm putting a plan together for my own team, but I'm also putting a plan together to beat you, T. Lou. And T. Lou is saying the same thing.
Yeah.
So that's a, to your point, that's a very interesting, from a star power and from two head coaches.
I also like the Pacers Bucks matchup. Just because of everything that has happened this season. Yeah.
That's a disrespectful matchup.
That's getting nasty. So the Pacers beat them in the in-season tournament. They win 4 out of 5 games against them. And then there's the Giannis gate with the ball on the career high. Ultimately, I think the Bucks had the ball the whole time, but there was some confusion on the court. But it just adds a layer. And I think, truthfully, I'm not going to speak for anybody on the Pacers, but I think, truthfully, like, the Pacers wanted the Bucks in the first round.
Yeah.
And of course, we don't know. They were saying today that his availability, Giannis's availability for game one is up in the air. So we don't know Giannis's status, but I still think that series is really intriguing.
That is
that's a storyline series.
That's a spicy series.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Kyler Burton in the playoffs for the first time.
That's a spicy series right there.
Yeah.
Because it's no love lost, like, between those two teams.
Listen, we're taping before the play-in tournament, but let's discuss both potential scenarios for my beloved New York Knickerbockers. You know what I'm saying? Who do they match up with better? The Sixers or the Heat? Because these are the potential opponents for the Knicks.
Mm. You know, it's interesting. There's so much discourse this year around Jalen Brunson. And I saw, you know, he can't be a 1A because he's small. And there's truth to that, in the sense that in the history of the NBA, or at least the modern NBA, it's been Isaiah and Steph as the two guys, right? So typically the best player is not 6'1", 6'2", whatever Jalen Brunson lists himself as. We know he's 5'11". He uses the size of his head to get over. He has a large cranium. He does.
He hit the biodome.
He does. Anyways.
This is a 76-year-old here.
Jalen is my guy, man. I played with him in Dallas. Yeah. So I was on his team in Dallas. But, you know, and then there was the a lot of talk. They'll never have the best player in a playoff series. And I think we can all, if you don't agree with this, then I don't know what you've watched this year in the NBA. Jalen Brunson is a top 10 player in the NBA. I did my votes earlier this morning. I had him in the top 5 in MVP. And it's a long explanation, but I had him 6th in terms of all NBA. So he ended up on the second team all NBA. Giannis, I jumped onto the first team. So he was one of the, let's call it 6 to 10 best players in the league.
Yeah.
And I think in any matchup, they match up well, because they have one of the best players. They have an identity. They have, to our point earlier, they have guys who have completely bought into roles. DiVincenzo all of a sudden becoming this high volume, deep 3-point threat who also guards. I think he was like 2nd in deflections after January 1st in the entire NBA. You got Josh Hart running around doing whatever he does like a madman. Hartenstein has been fucking phenomenal this year on both ends. OG, they're 20-3 in the lineup with OG. I think they're the favorites, regardless of who they play. And I know Miami's pedigree in the playoffs, and I know what Philly has in Joel Embiid. To me, the tougher matchup is the Philadelphia 76ers, because they have Joel Embiid.
And that was my follow-up question, how do you feel about the Knicks not ducking the smoke and being like, yo, you know what? We want it with you, Joel. Bring it. We got you.
Were you ever on teams that did that?
What's that?
At the end of the season? Like, intentionally lost games to get a worse seed?
For matchup reasons?
For matchup reasons. I remember in 17, 18. Yeah, my first year in Philly. That was the year Boston got off to a great start. And then Kyrie gets hurt. He's going to miss the season.
Everybody
was trying to, like, duck into the 7 seed so they could play Boston in the first round.
I remember one year.
Milwaukee did. Milwaukee, be careful what you ask for.
Yeah.
Boston ended up getting game seven of the conference finals.
Yeah, to your point, be careful what you ask for. Because it was the year here in New York where we felt like we matched up better with Miami, right? It was like just at that time, we felt like we could match up with them. So we was like, we want Miami. Like, we want to face Miami. We don't want to go play against Indiana first, where it's going to be Roy Hibbert and drawn out and fifth, you know what I mean? Like, we don't want that first round. We would get that. We would take that. But we feel like we can match up better with Miami. Then we want to win a game or some shit like that. And they got us the fuck out of there. But it was just like, watch what you asked for. We ran up against them as they were on their way to being great. You get what I'm saying? Right. So to your point, yeah, you got to ask what you asked for. But we wanted it, though. We really wanted that.
And that was, listen, I remember that season.
I think today, I do believe that it's a lot more of that today. Where teams are just like
strategy.
Yeah, like, man, we ain't, you know, this game, we need that game, we don't need that game. We want Indiana's like, we want Milwaukee. I think a lot of teams is looking at Milwaukee like we want Milwaukee.
You the antelope in the back of the herd.
And you still gotta go, but you still Milwaukee, you still have to go through Milwaukee. Like, it's not, no, you still have to go through those boys.
I agree.
We can't be disrespecting them, like, they sweet, but as teams are saying, we want Milwaukee because they may feel like that, but you still have to beat Milwaukee.
I feel like part of the reason that if it's true that teams are trying to get specific matchups in the first round or trying to avoid a certain team's bracket for the second round so that they can get to the conference finals, I think one of the things that has happened in the last few years is there's more parity.
Yes.
Right. There's more good teams. The depth of talent to me is higher than it's ever been, and it's more spread out than it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can have, you go down the list. I did the all NBA stuff today, and it's like you got play-in teams with two guys who have legit all NBA seasons on 46, 47 win teams. Right. You have Philly in that seven spot with an MVP and an all-star, all-NBA player in Tyrese Maxey.
Yes.
That's what you're getting in the seven spot.
Yes.
So if you're thinking about, we got to avoid this, I think there's some truth to that because playoffs are about matchups and how you can exploit other teams' weaknesses. It's not just about, oh, we're the better team. The better team doesn't always win in a playoff series.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. So that's why I say teams are, they plot. I think even more so today is just they looking. Everybody's watching the same thing. Everybody's reading and hearing the same comments and same feedback from the games and teams and piggybacking off of what everybody else is saying. So I do believe like these players are actually seeking out teams and players that they want to match up against.
Yeah, and I think it's
it may not be to the point where it's like a big, big conversation, but it's internally happening.
Nah, I definitely believe that. I mean, y'all can confirm or deny, but like, I feel like shit is more data driven now. Where it's just like, look, we match up, we played this team this amount of times during the season, we match up well, da 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 da. So let's
that goes out the window. In playoff time, it goes out the window. It's different. It's just different.
It feels different. That's what I'm saying. Like every possession, it feels more like almost like football. Where, like, every time you have the ball in your possession, you gotta make something happen. You know what I mean? Because this could be what makes or breaks this game.
Well, every possession counts.
Yeah. So, going off of that, JJ, what was your, like, yo, we in the playoffs now, motherfucker, this shit is different. Like, for you, that first moment, like, was it an elbow in the chest, of the hard pick? You know what I'm saying?
The
tea bag on a dunk. Like, what would, like,
my first two years, I had like brief, like, I think my rookie year, we got swept by the Pistons. I played maybe 10 minutes in game four.
Did I feel like, damn? Did I feel like the 2K? You know 2K when you got your creative player and you just watch?
No, because those guys...
you on the bench watching?
Rip and Rashid and those guys were so hard on me in the regular season my rookie year. They were just brutal whenever I would check into a game against them.
I could imagine, man.
So I knew that was coming. I think the second year I played briefly against Toronto in the first round. We lose to the Pistons again. The third year is when I was like, okay, this is what the playoffs is. And that was... You know, I played a little bit early in the series against Philly in the first round, but I started game six because Courtney Lee broke his face. Dwight had gotten suspended for elbowing Dallin Barrett. So me and Martian Gortat started on the road in the closeout game. And then I started seven straight games against the defending champ Boston Celtics. And that's when I was like, oh, this is the fucking playoffs.
This is level.
And KG was out that series. Oh, and every time I would walk by their bench, he'd be just fucking yapping in my
trash
ear.
Trash ass motherfucker. Pump bitch ass motherfucker.
White boy.
White boy. Fuck out of here, white boy.
Lot of that. Lot of
I know.
That. Pull
I
that
know.
Shit. I dare I you. Know. Fuck out of here.
I can't guard you, Ray. He can't guard you, Ray.
He can't guard you.
I know already.
He got no lateral quickness.
Disrespectful. He don't want to say exactly what the fuck was said.
Yeah,
but along those lines, shit that was being said.
Listen, I'm gonna say it for y'all. You know what I mean? Because I know y'all are very humble guys. I'm gonna say it for y'all. Y'all could probably go out there and give, you know what I'm saying, a team that needs a need.
I'm cool.
Y'all could fill a need on a playoff team right now. If you could jump on any playoff team right
I'm
now,
cool. I'm good.
What?
I'm enjoying us over here. This
no. I know you and Chris are there. We be chilling. I know, but listen. Video game status. You could insert prime JJ Redick, prime Melo on any playoff roster right now. What roster is it, and how you taking them over the top?
It's a good fucking scenario.
Right? You know what I'm saying? I mean,
I hate to think about it, but
I'd like to play with Jokic. Honestly,
it would be good. With
just them. Shore up their bench a little bit. You know, 15 to 20 minutes. A little bit more shooting at volume. You know.
Ray Allen in Miami.
Two man. Yeah, Ray Allen in Miami.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
In my prime, by the way.
Yeah.
I will gladly, in my prime, play 15 minutes a game. Give me a second to be on that team.
You're not
with
going
Jokic.
To, you up 30, 32. You're not going to the rack one time trying to.
Oh, yeah. But the other team, the way that Joe Mazzulla has gotten complete buy-in from his guys. They've all, it's weird, they've all had incredible seasons, but they've all at the same time taken a step back in terms of like the individual, I got to put up this amount of shots, I got to put up this amount of, like it's across the board in their top six. And then you have Hauser and Peyton Pritchard coming off the bench having career years. That type of environment, oh man, give me that. Give me that. Where like Drew Holiday's like, I was an all-star last year, high volume player. I'm willing now to experiment on defense, whatever Joe needs from me, and I'll be a corner three-point shooter. And night to night, depending on how teams are, because a lot of teams cross-match against them, they'll put a big on Drew. So night to night, Drew doesn't know what role he's going to play. Am I going to be a facilitator? Am I going to be a spot-up shooter? Am I going to be a screener? He doesn't know that night to night. And he's got complete buy-in from all the guys across the board. That's the type of team you want to play on.
Is that hard to do? Like, not from an ego point, but just from like a business. Like, you know, I gotta put up a certain amount of points. I gotta perform at a certain level, or else, you know, I'm in a contract year. Blah blah blah. How much of that goes into, you know, the buy-in?
I think when you reach a certain point in time in your career, it's a no-brainer, right? I think a lot of the noise come from the outside. Like, you can't do it, or they're not willing to do it. But in your mind, you know, if I'm looking at a team, I know what I'm able to bring to this team and what I have to do and what I'm, you know, of course I'm going to be willing to play that. I want to come here. I want to be here. I'm looking at this team, this situation, very intentionally, because I know all I have to do is play a specific role with that.
You have to be, it's going to sound counterintuitive and maybe it like a paradox, but you have to be selfish in some ways, because being selfish allows you to be who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to balance that with what the team needs. Mm. That's the challenge. And it's, by the way, it's an art, not a science. That's why it's so hard. I'm sure you were on teams. I was on 15 teams. Take that back. Damn. 17 teams because I got traded twice in season. I was on 17 different locker rooms. And I would say there's a feeling when you have that complete buy-in and everybody's moving in the same direction and everybody's literally trying to get to one thing. And you may get that in 15 years, and on 17, you might get that 5 times in your career. It's not like it happens every time. And I was on good teams that won 50 plus games where I was like, we don't have that level of cohesion that I've experienced my third year in Orlando, right? Or my second year with the Clippers. Like we when you have it, you know it. And when you don't have it, you're like, yeah,
we don't got that shit at all. We don't have
it. The roles is like the role plan is basically taking ownership. Like, okay, I'm going to be accountable for what I have to do.
So listen, don't duck the smoke, Jeff.
Never that.
Where's head been, straight back mellow, prime time, bucket getter? What 2024 team are you jumping on right now to take him to the Larry?
I've got mine for mellow. For prime mellow. I've got mine.
I honestly think, to be honest with you, New York. Mm. And I'm gonna say this because I've always wanted to play with, like, my thing is I wanted a point guard. Like, I always felt like I needed somebody like a Andre Miller, like, or Chauncey Billups. Like, I needed somebody at that position that was a big guard, you know, could post up, could, you know how to run a team, right? But still can do what they do. And I always needed somebody like a power forward, like a very explosive power forward at the four, just toughness, a Kenyon Martin, somebody like that. I just think the way that the Knicks roster is put together, they have a lead guard that's very, he can lead. So it takes it off of me to just try to go do everything. And now I could just be prime mellow and just, I have a role on this specific team right here to go score.
Get the buckets.
Go play that role for us. Because we got everything else. We got defenders. We got three-point shooters. We got a hell of a coach. Prime mellow and Tibbs will have to sit down and have a real conversation. That's the...
Yo, 48 minutes, Tibbs.
It's a lot of shit that we would have to sit down and iron this out, Tibbs.
Right? But we gonna make it happen?
But I'm gonna make it work. So I see that. I like Miami. Miami coach is a little different. But I would say New York or Dallas.
Because listen, when Julius...
Dallas, though. I just like that style of play. I like two hitters up there. Like,
you'd have to sacrifice a lot in Dallas. On ball usage.
I said I like them.
On ball usage, you'd have to sacrifice a little bit. I'm telling you,
I'll stand in the corner for Luka.
Team for prime Melo. And I'm not going to substitute anyone off.
No,
on or off the roster, on or off the starting lineup. The best team for prime Melo is the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Oh, shit. Ah,
the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Who's
me and Kat will have to have a real conversation. I'm saying that because my mindset at that time, prime Melo, was a different mindset. Like, it was kill mode. And if you ain't willing to kill with me, then we got to have a conversation. Anthony Edwards is somebody that I can have alongside me because I know that he really wanted. I know what he's bringing to the game. I know his work ethic, and I know that he's trying to learn. He would be willing to learn and try to learn. And us together, whew, that's a good one.
Foundation of a great defense.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Team that, not a great offensive team, struggles at times in the half court. Fucking give them Melo. Come on, man.
Nah, JJ, you see him, man.
He did something.
That is a good one. I would love to play with New York too, but with this team.
Oh, yeah, it's a great.
But that now that you said that Minnesota team, and yeah.
Be a good fit.
That'd have been special,
prime
too.
Miller.
Ooh. Them throwback Minnesota Timberwolves jerseys would have been crazy.
We talk about the future of the game a lot on this show, you know what I mean? And it's looking very magnifique.
Yeah.
With,
say magnifique.
Say magnifique. Listen, man, one word from y'all to describe Wemby's rookie season, man, like the impact that he's having. Because he said he's only 15% of the player that he wants to be right now. He's getting 7 blocks in the game with his offhand, but he's only 15% of the player that he wants to be right now.
I'm impressed with his awareness of that. Like, most people say that, and it's very cliche-ish. Like, oh, I'm only 50%, but, like, it's true. It's like, he still has to grow. Yeah, like, I'm not even, this summer, we going, you got to go get in the gym. I mean, I know you working out and weights, but we got to get a nice program for you, and we going to focus on that. The skill work, that shit going to come. You just sharpen the tools on that, but we going to work on a lot of small things that's going to get you from 15% to where you need to be.
I would just, one word to describe his rookie season, that's tough to describe in one word. I'm going to say the word is better, because I think he's been better than any level of expectation. For someone as hyped as he is, or as he was coming into the draft, and then the Spurs basically for the first 2 months of the season playing Jeremy Sochan at point and playing him with Zach Collins where he's the four man.
Experimenting.
And just experimenting with that for 2 months. And then to get to this point at the end of the season where all of a sudden they move him to the five, play Trey Jones with him more. He was better than I could have imagined. His rookie highlight mixtape is going to be fucking insane.
If anything else.
It's going to look like a 2K highlight.
There was a thing this morning I came across, and then there's all these stats. He's the first player in NBA history with X amount of threes, X amount of blocks, X amount of points.
Stats be killing me.
He's crazy. The one that I was like, what? He's the first player since Shaq's MVP year with the Lakers to go 20, 10, 3 assists, 3 blocks a game. And he's doing this as a rookie.
That's impressive.
And if that's 15% of...
Yeah.
Yo, listen,
if that's the baseline.
We're in trouble. We're in trouble.
So that's the baseline.
That's the baseline. That motherfucker, yeah. you in trouble. So you spent, doing the draft, covering the draft. You spent some time with him pre-draft.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What do you see from him, like, mentally? Because we all see physically what he's got. You know what I'm saying? But mentally, what puts him, like, in that category to be able to handle that pressure? It'll be like, yo, the alien, the unicorn, we've never seen nothing like this. And for him to go out and have the season that he's at.
Yeah, there was a moment when we talked to him on the podcast last June where I actually stopped, I turned to the camera, and I said, fuck, this guy's found enlightenment at 19. Like, you brought up the awareness. Like, he has this amazing ability to be aware of everything happening. It's not like he's shut himself off in a room and is trying to intentionally ignore all of the hype and all of the discourse. He's like, no, it's out there. Yeah, I can't change that.
I'm embracing it.
And I'm going to embrace it. But at the same time, I'm going to keep my same level of humility and unselfishness. I mean, the stories I heard coming out of the Spurs camp, like even early in the season where he was getting asked, like there was a Drake concert in Austin and he got asked to come up on stage, and because Drake was doing that with a bunch of NBA guys this offseason. And Wemby was like, can my teammates come up on stage with me? Because they're going to be at the concert with me. And Drake's camp was like, no. And he's like, then I don't want to do it. What 19-year-old kid doesn't want to go up on stage with Drake?
Yeah.
Like, he's just, there's been anomalies for star players in that they have been low maintenance. I mean, I was a role player, and I would describe myself as like somewhat low maintenance. There's like Steph, and there's like Tim Duncan. Wemby's one of those guys, you know. Yeah. That to me is as impressive as anything he does on the court.
He's out here, man. He's the future, dog. Like, JJ, my man, appreciate you. Thank you for the insights. You know what I mean? Yo, 7 p.m. My in Brooklyn.
JJ. My man.
Yo, shout out to Duke legend JJ Redick for stopping through 7 p.m. in Brooklyn. You know what I'm saying? Number one. A playoff preview and fucking with it or fuck out of here will continue right after this little break. You know what I mean? Don't move.
We're taking a brief break from today's episode to let you know that Prize Picks got you covered when it comes to helping you make some bread.
That is correct, champ. The NBA playoffs is right around the corner. Prize Picks is the easiest and the most exciting way to turn every game-changing moment into 100 times your money. With as little as 4 correct picks, you could turn $10 into $1,000.
Prize Picks also allows you to pick combo projections across basketball and baseball with specials, so you can support all your teams while still cashing in.
All right, champ. Time to lock in. I got a couple projections for you, a little more or less situation. All right. First one, more or less. 140-point game from Jalen Brunson in the playoffs. Is he going to have more than 140-point game or less than 140-point game?
Let's say more.
More. You know what I'm saying? Lock that in. You know what I'm saying? Because I also agree. Right, next one we got for you. You know what I'm saying? Next one we got for you. Melo. You know what I'm saying? The Oracle, the God. You know what I mean? More or less.
Mm-hmm.
Triple doubles for Luka Doncic in the playoffs. More or less than 2?
More.
More.
Triple double in the playoffs. Yep. More than 2? Say more.
More. He's expecting a Luka magic, ladies and gentlemen. Yo, listen, man, you see how easy that was? Make sure you visit prospects.com/7pm and use the promo code 7pm for a deposit match up to $100. Hey, Mellow Man, 2024 is already moving along pretty swiftly. You know what I mean? Before you know it, summer's here. And with the summer months comes concerts, shows, things of that nature. There's no better way to copy tickets than by using SeatGeek.
That's right, because SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app with more than 70,000 events every day, from sports to concerts and much more.
All of that, you know what I'm saying? Whether you want to check out an NBA playoff game, catch a little hockey, a little MLB action, you know what I mean? SeatGeek got you covered when it comes to finding options for you.
SeatGeek also puts all the tickets across the web in one place so you know you're getting the best deal. That's how I like it. Then they rate the tickets on a scale from 1 to 10.
You know what I mean? So you know you're not getting no garbage. Every ticket is backed by the buyer guarantee. And SeatGeek is the only site that lets you return your tickets ahead of the event with swaps.
So be sure to use our code 7PM for $20 off tickets at SeatGeek.
Right.
That's $20 off your first purchase with promo code 7PM. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app.
Go get that.
Now back to the show.
Number one show on the internet, 7 p.m. in Brooklyn, you know what I'm saying? Number one segment in America, you know what I'm saying? The polls is saying it. Fucking with it or fuck out of here. Carmelo Anthony the God, your boy the Kid Merrill. You know, we got to talk about it, man. The culture, what's going on in the world. AI, our guy, you know what I'm saying?
That's a fact.
The answer, you know what I'm saying? They gave us the answer. They gave him his flowers, finally, you know what I'm saying, in Philly. They gave him the statue.
Mm-hmm.
Only problem was, statue wasn't statuing like that. You know what I'm saying? So, it was a little smaller than expected. You know what I'm saying? To say the least. So, are we fucking with it or fuck out of here? The 76ers statue for Allen Iverson.
So, that's what I'll say. As people, we don't have patience.
that was deep, champ.
Look,
oh, rip.
We don't have patience. We jumped on, like, just a, you know what I mean, a small little snippet of the statue.
Right.
Niggas like, nah. That's even cool. Myself, I'm not even gonna hold you.
Yeah.
Before I should have been more aware of that, but
I felt victim
the first
to
thing
too.
I seen was like, nah. Nah. Like, when you just see the screenshot, I was like, nah.
That's crazy.
What the fuck? Like, nah, they didn't put my son on, you know what I mean? Like, they gotta, I'm like, nah, they can't do that. And then I saw the reason why, and it made sense. So I'm fucking with the statue of AI. I'm fucking with it.
Yeah.
Because it goes along with the theme.
Right.
Of what's going on over there with the other statue. So I'm fucking with it.
Right. All right.
But I'm fuck out of here if he deserve a
joint. Come on, part on the left, man. Like a real official statue.
Yeah, yeah.
God damn it.
Yes. He deserves that. But
it makes sense.
I love it. I'm glad that they gave him I'm glad that he's getting his flowers all around.
Right.
Not just basketball. You know what I mean? Like, he's from the people, you know, he's starting to tap into business and, you know, Reebok is doing a hell of a job by bringing him back and putting him at the helm of that. Shout out to Shaq, and you get what I'm saying. Yeah. So, it's good to see him moving in those different lights.
Shout out to Chuck, man. You're out here doing the thing. I also fell victim to the misinformation of the internet. You know what I'm saying?
We saw it the same time.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, this is crazy. Because you're right. When you look at the screenshot, it looked bananas. Because it's like and the angle don't even help neither. Because it's like a higher angle, so that the statue look even smaller. It looked like he's playing with like a Funko Pop or some shit like that. Some little G.I. Joe type shit. And I'm like, this is it's AI, Philly.
Yeah.
But to your point, when you read more than the headline, you know what I'm saying? When you read the article, you realize it's part of a monument. Kind of like the Yankees Monument Park, where it's like they got Mo Cheeks, they got Dr. J, they got, you know what I'm saying, all the Philly legends. And then AI is obviously, you know, took his rightful place among those legends. You know what I'm saying? But I still think, you know what I mean? Come on, man. Like, you know what I mean? Lakers got the life-size joints, you know what I mean? Like, come on.
But the Lakers don't have a ring of, like a walk of honor, like walk of fame. Yeah, you get what I'm saying? Yeah, so
They got their own thing.
There's only a couple people that could get statues out there with the Lakers. You know what I mean? So in Philly.
Yeah, they got Barkley
like
out there.
They want to honor, they cultures, they honoring differently.
Right, right.
You know, so.
So, yeah.
I fuck with it. I'm about time.
We fucking with it. AI, shout out to you getting your flowers, you know what I'm saying? Shout out to Sixers finally doing right by you. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, we fucking with it.
Fucking with it.
So you got like a favorite memory with AI, playing with him, you know what I'm saying? Or like a specific play even, you know what I mean? Because there's certain moments where you see a superstar really be a superstar.
My favorite memory playing with Chuck is like the fact that I was able, like I'm learning, like I'm watching him, how he prepares for games. Because, you know, it's everybody prepared for games differently, but you hear narratives of Chuck and people, you know, when they get traded and, you know, you got to break those narratives. And a lot of times those narratives don't be true. You know what I mean? They be false. So I remember, like, as the season going on, and I'm like studying like how he's getting ready for the games and how he come in and how early he come in and what he do. Because again, I still got to learn personnel, right? So I'm learning, I'm peeping him, how he, you know, getting dressed and sneakers and how he lay his shit out on, you know, how he lay his towel on the floor and. You know what I mean? Like, what shoe he put on first? What sock he put on first? The Walkman that he... I'm paying attention to all of this. I got to learn the music he's listening to. He's listening to fucking Michael Jackson and R. Kelly. Like, and I'm like, oh, shit. Like, I would be expecting to be listening to, you know, some crazy shit.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh, this is different. And he just vibing. He just cooling. You know, go get his ankles taped, come back. Like, he just... you know, he turned into his locker. Like, so I'm like, oh shit, this is how you prepare. I'm still learning different people. And we went from a couple hours before the game, laughing and joking and to like the switch. And I saw the switch. I was able to experience that AI switch where he go from the lovable AI laughing, one headphone on, one headphone off, like Walkman, the CD player. He used to listen to the DVD, used to walk around watching the DVD player all the time.
The portable DVD?
The portable DVD of Martin.
Yo.
All Martin, though. So all he watched was Martin.
Pre-game in there?
Pre-game is Martin. So it's like, I'm learning like how people react and get ready and able to lock in and focus, but I don't know. I know he's about to go out there and get 40. I want to know how he's about to go do it.
Yeah.
Everybody else is working out before the games. This motherfucker ain't getting those shots up. He ain't doing shit. And then that switch, we about to run out and that switch hits and you see it and you understand greatness and you understand how somebody can just take it from here and take it from there in a split second and how you can lock in and how you need to lock in. Like that for me, that was my favorite experience. Like one of my favorite experiences, like being with AI and playing on the same team, just wanting to learn his movements and wanting to learn how he think and just like, yo, damn, how, because I got to get on the same page with him in order for this to work.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and we're very, very similar in certain ways. So it's like, yo, this is how it's going to work. We got to be, we got to hang around each other. We got to, you know what I mean? Just a lot of things that we had to do to kind of mold that and make that work. So especially early, younger in my career, I was able to see like, damn, this is a superstar. Like this is how he, and I'm trying to make my way
up get up there, way. Get to that level. Yeah, yeah. So, champ, I'm thinking like, we got the 7 PMEs, right?
Okay.
Giving out awards.
Okay.
If the NBA can make an award for Allen Iverson, what would that award be? What would it be for?
This year's 2024 Allen Iverson Award recipient is... Damian Lillard for having the hardest mixtape of 2024.
Yeah. it is, and I don't want it to be like, oh, the best player under 6 feet, 6'1" award. Like it can't be something cliche-ish like that. Like the Heart Over Height Award. Like, you know, it's like something like Heart Over Height. A cultural, you know, somebody who's changing cultures.
That right? Part, like, bro.
You know, who I just think some that is a cultural trophy. A cultural award.
Yeah.
That should be an Allen Iverson Award, right? Because underneath of that culture, that means it's not just, oh, I'm doing this. Like I'm actually creating a culture within our culture and adding to our culture and being creative within our culture. So it's not a lot of people who are doing that. And AI was doing it like unknowingly because that's just what's the culture at that point in time.
And that's I was going to ask you, like, did that make you feel more comfortable coming in? You know what I'm saying? Because you could like, yeah, I could be me. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I don't got
to
do.
Meaning when he came to Denver?
So, no. Like when he came in the league, like 96.
Yes.
And they compare y'all draft classes a lot too.
Yeah, 96-03. I'm sick of it.
You already know. Like that's
sick
like
sick of it.
That's like the Jordan Bryant debate. Like that's
sick
a,
of it.
That's a forever debate. So seeing him come in the league and have his own style, his own way that he carried himself and all of that, did that make you feel like yo more comfortable? Like, yo, you know what I'm saying? I could be mellow, man. I could
yeah,
be
you, Carmelo you, Anthony. You pick thing. You picked your lane. Again, it was two lanes. I mean, we spoke about this in earlier episodes. It was two lanes that was actually happening. And it was that clean cut suit, professional, Michael Jordan-esque, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That, even though he was different, but it was just that lane. And then it was the, at this time, the streets, culture, attitude, ego, you know what I mean? Family, loud, enjoying hood, ghetto, like that. It was the cultural lane too.
Right.
So when you came in, you was one of those. So yes, he definitely changed that. And I had to go that route. I had to, because that was the route. That was the only route that I knew of at that time. That's the only route I knew at that point in time.
The boxy suits, it wasn't for you.
Nah,
only on
the boxy
draft
suits,
only
boxy
draft
boys
night.
And all like
the
that. The boxy suits wasn't for me. And I used to have arguments, you know, debates with my agent back then at the time. He was like, Mel, you got to put a suit on. I was like, nah. He used to always tell me, yo, talk to me in 5 years. Talk to me in 5 years. You're going to be having a suit on. You're going to put a suit on.
So there's a lot of, like, media out there, you know what I'm saying, of you and AI, like, together. And it looks like the relationship is, like, kind of like a, like, mentor, big bro, like, listen, I've been here. Like, is it like that for real?
I was considered at this time like AI's little brother, like at the time, right? And it was like, even though he's going through what he's going through, he was the only one that I could look at and look up to, that because he's, I felt like he's the only one who understood my dynamics and what I was dealing with and what I was going through, and still have to be somewhat of elite on a daily basis. So that's the only thing I could base it off of, was looking at him and saying like, damn, how the fuck he's every day, he's it's Philadelphia 76ers, Allen Iverson, Larry Brown, it's every single day. And then you have the headline, and then you look at the stats and the games, and it's like, damn, he's going through all of this and getting 40s and 45s and 50s and carrying a team at 6 foot, 6'1". Like, this is crazy. So I started to, like, no matter what is happening off the court or around me, I'm still going to go out there and perform. Fuck it. And there's not a lot of people who can, who understands that. So when he came to Denver, it was almost like, damn, like, nigga, you home now. Like,
yeah.
Big bro is home. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah. So now, even though he went through his experiences and maybe still was going through some experiences, he was still able to, like, yo, champ, like, leave that shit alone. Like, he was still able to give me that. And I'm like, damn, this nigga, this, what? Nigga, you telling me that? Like, you telling me that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, so, and then I started to just learn and, like, flip my mindset a lot. And like, he was a big brother that you look for.
Right.
Nigga who just come home type of shit. Like, that's how he was. Your brother, yeah, yeah. Brother been up north for a while, come home, you talking to him, but you see him from afar, and letters and notes and
putting you on game and stuff.
Right, and then when you come home, you really getting that 101, the shit that, you know what I mean? That information, that how to do it.
First hand. Right.
So that was that, and he always was right there. I was getting in this shit, he right there by my side. Press conferences. Well, usually it was him. It's usually him in that seat, right? And then you look and see who's next to him. So having him by my side in these press conferences, and you know, while I'm fucking up off the court, having him, I got you. I'm here.
I know how to navigate this.
I've been through this already.
Yeah.
Right. So he was always that. He was always, no matter what, no judgment. Yeah, I done been through it too, right?
All right, man. Rap, we were talking about it last week, man. It's heating up.
Time was ticking.
It's the sport, yeah. We were talking about Drake was on the clock. Hey, 23 seconds left on the clock. He said, has he pulled from three? Ah, bang! Drake for three! Came out with the 50 push-ups, I believe is the name of the track, is the unofficially or officially. And he went at Kendrick, he went at Future, he went at Metro Boomin, shut your whole ass up and mix drums, he went at, bro.
The Weeknd. Nav.
Everybody, bro. Like, I think he dissed Eddie Murphy, I'm not sure. Like, he's just out here going crazy, just blah, 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 letting the chopper off. So, are we fucking with it or fuck out of here? The Drake diss. As like the first, you know, Drake, the first Drake shot, pa pa, in a battle.
I don't condone violence.
Now that was a metaphorical.
I know, I'm gonna spin a block back, but I just want to make that PSA. I don't condone violence. I don't condone the beefs and all of that shit. So let me just say that. On the flip side of that, with that being said, Drake shot back. He feel like it's 20-1 right now. It's
he said it.
So I like how he gave everybody their shine. He gave everybody their moment on that song.
The Drake over. That's what I've been calling it.
He gave everybody your moment. Like, you get your moment. I'm very direct with who I'm talking about. I'm very intentional on what I'm saying. And he's saying, I'm not letting up. So I fuck with it. I fuck with it. I fuck with it because it's hard to do that.
Yeah.
It's hard to shoot at 20. It's hard.
And not not like 20. It's
hard to
like,
shoot
you know,
at 20. Like, you know, I'm just saying because he mentioned 20 V1.
Yeah.
Like.
So a lot of, Ross was in there, Rose was in there, a lot of people, man. So yeah, nah, he's
so
he's
the real Rumble. I fuck with him responding and how he responded. Now it was go time.
Okay, so I got a similar take. The only difference is Drake is, I always feel like Drake had been strategic with his shit. You know what I'm saying? Like the way, like, yo, I'm gonna do this at this time. Yo, I got beef with this rapper. I'm gonna drop this song. Like the Meek situation. I'm gonna drop that back to back and you're gonna hear this all summer in the club, at OVO Fest, like everywhere. You're gonna hear this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm fucking with him coming out and shooting and clapping back. The way that it dropped though, the leak, yo, we don't know. Cause now, you know, it's 2024, Chen.
You don't know that. You don't know that.
But it's 24.
Did he leak it?
It could have been strategic, but that's also another thing when you talk about Drake, that could have been part of the strategy. If it was part of the strategy, I don't know, because we in 2024, champ. Like, they, AI.
You think that was a strategy, though?
AI is a motherfucker.
You think that was a strategy, though?
It could have been, yo, let's leak this. This is what I was thinking, right?
Do you believe it was a strategy?
I think it could have been.
You believe it was part of the overall strategy?
I think it could have been, yo, let's drop this. See how people react. If they're like, oh, he got him, then all right, let's go ahead and drop some art with it and drop the master version.
You think it was a strategic leak?
A strategic
or
leak.
Or somebody in his camp leaked it?
I think it was a strategic leak. Because, like, yo, Drake been, I mean, as far as I know, am I bugging? Like, his albums, they haven't, like, not that they haven't leaked, but it hasn't been, like, egregious. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Where it's just like, yo, the album out, the shit leaked 3 months before it dropped type of shit.
But he dropped albums on tour. You know what I mean? He dropping all type of different sounds of music.
Right.
He got other shit going on. But so because of that point of he got all the other shit going on, for him to take that time out to shoot back at every single person, I'll fuck with that.
I'm super fucking with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But listen, roll it out a little nicer better next time. You know what I'm saying? Let me get some cover art. Let me get a little video. Because Drake is creative. You know what I'm saying?
It's go time now, though, baby. Yeah. It's go time. It's, so
you got
to. With everybody.
Get the gloves
involved,
on, B.
Whoever's involved.
Get it shaking. Ross dropped the diss. You know what I'm saying? He came
fire.
Out.
It was fire.
He came out and said, white boy.
That is funny.
He
as
said,
shit.
The white boy. And that's so. Let's get into this.
Funny. Hold on. That is funny.
And that's the shit. So let's get into it.
Ross is a funny nigga.
Because that's the shit, bro. It's like, yo, because as fans of rap music, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know why I said that like Glorilla. I said rap music. As fans of rap, you want to hear the bars, right? Like, yo, let's go back and forth. I want to hear song, shot back, song, clap back, But then the motherfucker like Ross come into play where it's just like, it's not necessarily about the bars.
It is about the bars. Don't dispute that.
No, it is. But with him, it's like you get extra
because he's gonna do the like social media. Yeah, he wanna make you like a goofy. That's right.
Exactly, bro.
He wanna try to make you look like a goofy.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's just like, dog, when you're in the middle of a rap battle,
yeah,
that's part of the. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, because Drake did it too on his shit.
No rules.
No rules. He said, "Yo, Drake, Kendrick got a size 7 shoe."
Yeah,
that's crazy. Shout out to man.
Yo, listen. That shit Ross said is funny as shit.
White boy, huh?
Just only he can come up with to say
you know
some
shit.
Out of any and everything he can fucking possibly say.
Fam.
For him to say that.
When he had the shit going on with 50, he was like, "You motherfucking monkey." And he was
it's
just saying this shit.
It's always one words though. It's always like
because the nigga pick a most random ass word or some shit that's so regular, but he make it sound crazy. Like he just called the nigga white boy. That's regular. That ain't no crazy. But
I wasn't expecting that. That's the whole thing. That's what I wasn't expecting him to say that. That's just that shit was funny, man.
Yeah.
This shit is, you know, Ross is funny, man. Ross funny as shit, man. You know what I mean? Like. I don't know. I just want to see who's next. I want to see
who's up next. You know what I mean?
Keep us entertained, but keep it inside the ring. You get what I'm saying?
That part. That's all. Keep it peace. You know what I'm saying? No bodies. You know what I'm saying? Like just lyrical bodies. You know what I mean? And next up, Wayne Gang. We got, listen, man, overtime got posted a clip of this prep game where a young player at the free throw line did this. For all those that are listening on the audio version, man, he took a step back free throw. This is crazy.
This is new. We about to see.
Yeah, yeah. This will make Patrick Ewing be like, you practiced that shot?
Oh!
Oh, not the step back down!
Oh, shit!
This is a step back free throw! Yo! Yo!
Somebody told him, yo, just get it how you get at the free throw line.
Yo, just get it. Yo,
it's more effort to do all of that than it is to just stand there and shoot.
Is that what happened? Is this, okay, so Coach Mello, walk me through this. Is this the coach being like, hey, look, bro, your free throw shooting is atrocious.
Yeah, okay.
But you can shoot in other ways.
Okay.
Just get it how you get it, bro. When you get up there, if you got to step it back. If you got to tween and pull it, just.
First of all.
If you got to dribble and step into it.
No, it's definitely not that. I'm yelling, what the fuck? Bro, what the fuck are you doing? Like, we're in the gym and you do that shit. What the fuck are you doing? That's disrespectful. That's the disrespect of the game.
Yo, no.
And I sound like an old nigga. Come on,
this
man.
Old,
like,
man, this old motherfucker,
listen, I'm
man.
All about the evolution of the game.
This old motherfucker, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm all about the evolution of the game and growing the game and making it more fun and exciting and trying different things. That is fucking crazy. You might as well take free throws out the game if they start doing that shit.
Yo!
You can't. That's supposed to be a violation.
So think
you
about it like
you don't get that bucket. Did they count that bucket?
Behind the line, is you good.
Man, you can't. Nah.
Little Kemba free throw?
That's the shit I start my workout out with in a sidestep. You can't do that at a free throw.
Yo.
But I done seen something to your point that could be, like, this is the only way I can shoot my free throw. Like, I'm comfortable with shooting my free throw like this. Or he was just fucking with the opposing team. So either way, it's crazy.
Regardless, you wildin', Mike.
So nah, like, I'm not fucking with it.
Nah.
Fuck out of here.
Fuck out of here. Yeah, nah, listen. Me personally, I'm low key fucking with it because I'm a fan of the untying the shoelaces at the free throw line.
That is different.
Shot the swish. I like motherfuckers fucking around and making the game more entertaining.
No, that's crazy right there.
A step back fucking free throw.
But he looked like, you know, like he used to doing it.
Like you practice it.
Can you pull that video up again, please?
Because that's what I'm saying. Like it looked like just like you said, this is how I start my practice.
Yeah, look.
It looked like pop, 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 pop. That cash.
Oh, he practiced that.
Oh. He counted dribbles. Pop, pop.
Sturdy. That's sturdy. Sturdy, sturdy, sturdy.
That shit coming right back.
I fuck with the, you know what I mean? Like, I don't fuck with it because it looks crazy. Maybe I just don't understand why he did it, but it looks crazy.
I fuck with it because it looked crazy. Yo, so as a certified bucket getter, you know what I'm saying? Is the step back the most dominant skill for a shooter to have today in the NBA? That's that clean, create separation.
Well, yes, the game is about separation anyway, so you want to get as separated from the guy as possible. I do think the step back is a much needed, like, add-on to everybody's game. It's just when you do it. Now, you see some people just doing it just to do
just
it.
To do it.
Every day they do it just
let me show you what I got
about
that.
They get out of bed and the first move they do is they sidestep with no ball.
He sidestep into the shower, nigga. Like.
You know what I'm saying? We used to walk around the hallway and act like we shooting, act like we dunking. Now, you might spend some time, but now it's a step back. You walk through the crib with no basketball, just step it back. For no reason. So it's becoming your natural movement now for everybody.
Right.
It's just when you do it. You got to know when to do it, when not to do it. Some people have mastered it to where that is their signature.
What's the perfect step back scenario?
the perfect step back scenario. Like if you going past somebody, like if you dribbling, if I'm dribbling right and I got a defender like staying close to me, right? But I know he's over aggressive, right? I know he want to beat me to the spot.
Yeah.
I'm going to get to the spot that he want me to get to, and then I'm going to separate myself. Then I'm going to step back. So now you got to keep going. So the step back look crazy. If I go and you go at the same time, and then you get to the spot that you really want me to get to because you know that's the spot that I can get back in front of the offensive man, then I'm stepping back. And it ain't really nothing.
You look crazy because you're still going.
Yeah, it looks crazy. You see guys like Shea got that. Mm. He just play at his own pace. You ain't going to speed him up. He going to go. You're going to be over aggressive and he going to snatch back. He going to step back. Like you see Steph. Steph does it. Luka does it at his own pace. You know what I mean? Like when certain people do the step back, Jalen Brunson does it. Dame, sidestep. Tatum, sidestep right, like it's sidestep left. Like this is what's happening. So when you see people that do it and it becomes part of their DNA, and then you see people who just do it just to be doing it, it don't look the same.
Kemba shit was crazy. Not to be a Bronx, you know what I'm saying, Homer.
Nah, Kemba,
you
know
Kemba step back
Kemba
was stupid.
Was known for a step back. And the scout report was, he gonna step back.
Yo, so going back to the fucking with the fuck out of here. You fucking with the fuck out of here. Step back jumper as your free throw shooter.
That's crazy. Fuck out of here.
On the prep scene, bro, because you out there. Kai out there. The prep. We out here getting ready. You seeing a lot of talent out there. But it's like you said, it's a younger generation.
It's disrespectful.
Old motherfuckers. Some shit that you old motherfucker you done seen?
The crazy shit is that I'd be like, nah, I wouldn't be able to take that. Is like when somebody get banged on, somebody get dunked on like crazy, and then not don't even bother me. The too small don't bother me. It's just when nigga jump in your face and everybody come around and start yelling at top hand. Yo, that right there. Yo, I'd have been like Marlon Wayne on Don't Be a Menace when he hit all the kids.
What the fuck?
That is disrespectful. I be looking at that like, yo, nah.
Could it be me?
Like, nah. You get banged on nigga yelling in your face? Like, I'm all for that type of shit, but here? And they seeking me out to yell at me like, nah.
Bro, what? Like you fell over
and
here?
And if you fall, it's even worse.
Oh, nah. The step over?
Over top yelling at you.
That's crazy.
Yo. That's crazy right there. So if anybody get dunked on out there on the prep level and they allow that shit.
That top.
Don't allow that shit. Don't allow
that. Yo, bench him. Coach, put him and say, yo, you sitting
don't allow
minutes.
That shit, man. No,
you sitting in the whole corner.
I'm not condoning violence. Saying, that's violent right there.
Yo. The step over yelling is crazy because it's just like, yo, my man, you got the Frank right here. Like, you wilding. You're wilding, bro. You cannot do that.
You wilding right now. Oh, shit. But nah, that's crazy. The top head yell, scream, three niggas coming around. That is crazy.
Jumping his chin.
Yeah, that's crazy. Nah,
they throwing
crazy.
It up and shit. They do handshakes.
Yeah, they doing handshakes and shit. Nah.
Yo.
Camera. All the cameras is on the court.
Oh, you already know.
Yeah. Nah.
House of highlights in that bitch.
Yeah, nah. I'm the first time I ever saw that. I said, "What the fuck? That's what's going on?" Like, oh shit. Oh, I got to get back in tune to what's happening.
Yo.
That's what I'm saying. That's a fact. That's a fact. Shout out to my guy Cat. Relax. Stay mellow, man.
Stay mellow.
Calm in the midst of chaos, man. You know what I'm saying? You know?
Yeah.
When in doubt.
But in doubt, you already know. Stay mellow, baby. Yo, shout out to JJ Redick. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to you, my guy, for coming through. Duke legend, doing a little playoff preview with us. You know what I mean? Breaking it down a little something, something. Stay locked in at 7 p.m. in Brooklyn. You know what I mean? We will be here next week, y'all.